Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. I'm Julia Bell, and today I'm bringing you an exclusive long-form conversation with Mandu Reid, the first black leader of a national political party in the UK and the first openly bisexual party leader. She leads the Women's Equality Party, who are pretty brand new. They've only been around since 2015. And it was a pretty long conversation. I think we were talking for about an hour and a half, an hour and 15 minutes. And in that time, we covered a lot of bases.
We practice and encourage political polyamory. Now, what that means is you can be a member of our party and a member of another party, and we don't have a problem with it. I feel that because there are so few people that kind of like, look like me, have my background in the political sphere, if I make a mistake, I feel like that mistake is way more likely to be catastrophic. We do not have enough men in the mix. Men are absolutely free, welcome, encouraged to join. I want men fighting alongside us, 9% of joiners being male.
That's more than the way it'd be, to be honest.
But it's not enough. It's not enough.
The party was founded by Sandy Toksvig, the TV presenter and comedian who you might have seen hosting QI and also the Great British Bake Off. And her co-founder was journalist and author Catherine Mayer. They don't have any seats in Parliament. So they are, it's fair to say, a very small party. But when their press team reached out wanting to set up an interview, I couldn't resist because I've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about the main players and the big parties. And our system, being first past the post to get MPs into Westminster, that makes it nigh on impossible for smaller parties like this to even have a hope. But that being said, with them running in the London Assembly elections on the 6th of May, which the London Assembly is like a mini parliament in London, they may well be in with a chance, since that is a proportional representation voting system. And that opens the door way more and explains why parties like UKIP and the Greens have had relative success at getting seats. Listen, as you'll be able to hear from our chat, I'm not particularly interested in making myself look bigger or cleverer than the person I'm interviewing, so it's not an antagonistic conversation, but it's up to you to make your mind up, and frankly, it's not really one of my interests to sway the way that you vote at all. But information is power, so why not learn about one of the new players on the political scene in the UK? What I will say is that Mandu struck me as someone who is just really nice and generous with her time, actually, because we spoke like quite late on a Saturday night. And, you know, she was just very engaged and driven by the cause that she thinks is best for our country. And I think that is what you want from politicians, whether you agree with her politics or not. I think you'll find that hard to take away from her. I'm very intrigued to see what you think of her. Get in touch with me at @JuliaBell_X on social media. I hope you enjoy the conversation. If you want to listen to the full unedited thing, I posted the entire Zoom recording in video form on my Patreon page. So the link to get to that is in the episode description. And with no more faff, here is what Mandu Reid had to say. Hello, Mandu.
Hi.
Okay. How are you doing? Has today been a busy day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, bank holiday weekend, the last push before polling day next week. So I've been out since early this morning with a whole team of web activists. We were in Wandsworth today.
Right.
You know, just getting the word out, getting the word out.
All right. Well, let's get started, if you don't mind.
No, let's do it. Let's do it.
So firstly, the 6th of May elections are quite a complicated day. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So can you quickly give us an idea of where the Women's Equality Party are running and in which elections, and also where you as the party leader fit into that?
Sure. We are running across the country. We've got 40 candidates in total. We've got a slate of candidates in Scotland who are competing in those elections there. We've got candidates sort of spread across different parts of England. Nobody in Wales, I'm afraid. Our movement is still growing, you know, in Wales, and it wasn't mature enough these elections to meaningfully contest some candidates. But the really big deal for us is the London elections. I am our candidate for Mayor of London, and I'm sure it hasn't escaped your notice. There are all sorts of people running for Mayor of London this time round. Yeah. So I'm in amongst it with them. And we are also, as the Women's Equality Party, contesting a team of extraordinary women competing for a seat on the London Assembly, which is, like, for those who don't know, the sort of mini parliament, which holds the mayor to account, scrutinizes the mayor, who's one of the most powerful politicians in this country. The London Assembly elections are, I'm not ashamed to say, our top target, because the electoral system is a proportional representation system, which means small parties always, always, always get a chance. I mean, UKIP had two seats on the London Assembly. We're definitely going after one of theirs. I think, you know, 21st century Britain will be served way better by having the Women's Equality Party round the table rather than UKIP round the table, given what the country's facing, right? And the issues that have emerged since last year. So we are fighting as hard as we can with our modest resources. You know, we don't have deep pockets, we don't have fat cat backers, but we're doing the best we can to position ourselves as strongly as possible to win at least one seat on the London Assembly. You may think it's a bit weird. I'm a politician, I'm standing for mayor, and I'm not talking up my own chances. I am an outside bet to be the next mayor of London. And so what I'm trying to encourage people to do is, you know, it's nice if they want to vote for me, but if they really want to vote for equality and do something historic, we're asking people to vote Women's Equality Party on the London Assembly ballot.
Right. So you're happy to admit that you are an outside bet, as you put it, for winning the mayoralty. And you're a young party.
6 years old.
Exactly. So you're still not that well known or established in comparison to your competition. Just for anyone who doesn't know much about the Women's Equality Party to start with, who are you? What do you do? What do you stand for? And what will it mean for Londoners if a WEP party candidate gets a seat in the Assembly?
I mean, it'll mean political sunshine for Londoners, but I will come back to that in a second. Let me take a few steps back. Who are we? I mean, as I've already mentioned, we're 6 years old. We are the UK's first and only feminist political party. And we are different. We are not like the other political parties for several reasons. I mean, number one, we've got a completely unambiguous laser focus. You know, other parties blow with the wind. They're like, this issue's hot. Okay, we're going to go after that. All we want to see happen is the country move towards being a place where men and women are truly equal citizens. We want to dismantle and eradicate inequality between men and women and other forms of inequality along the way too, because actually we believe firmly that equality is better for everybody. And so the difference between us and many other parties is we're not trying to chase power for the sake of power. We're trying to do ourselves out of business. We want to get to the point where there's no need for a Women's Equality Party, but there is a need at the moment because none of the other parties are anywhere near ambitious enough about this work.
I remember you guys shared a hashtag and it was like, nick our policies.
Yeah,
basically, take our ideas. Yeah, yeah.
Plagiarize, please. I mean, you know, the first election we contested, a general election, we literally printed off our manifesto, wrapped it up in beautiful paper, tied it in a bow and delivered it to the headquarters of the other party saying, you know what? Here are some ideas that we'd love you to co-opt. All but the Labour Party took it. The Labour Party refused to take our manifesto.
That's your old party. You used to be a member of the Labour Party. Did you feel snubbed?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think that most institutions have issues. And I think, as you can see, it's not like it's in plain sight. The Labour Party is working through all sorts of issues. How radical are they prepared to be on these issues? And so, you know, I'm sure they'll come round. But while they're getting their house in order, we got work to do, because COVID alone has sent, in my view, the progress we had been making, tentative, slow progress, not fast enough for my liking, towards equality between men and women. It's put that kind of on hold, and in some cases threatening to put it into reverse gear. So mm-hmm. I do not have time to wait for other politicians, other political parties to get their house in order. Our job is to be the voice that's loud, is resolute, is unambiguous, fighting for and championing these issues. And another thing we do, which is a little different about the Women's Equality Party, is we practice and encourage political polyamory. Now, what that means is you can be a member of our party and a member of another party, and we don't have a problem with it. Most other political parties, they will kick you out if you so much as kind of express a sniff of an interest in another political party. You know, right. People have been thrown out of other parties for retweeting something that a, you know, person from a rival party said or did or whatever. And like, we think that that actually doesn't serve our politics, that polarizes our politics, and it also prevents people from expressing the fullness of their political identity. So I don't know, your dad might have been a prominent trade unionist, or your granddad or something like that, so you naturally affiliate towards one party, good for you. But maybe you feel that the party you belong to could or should do more in the areas we represent. And we're like, hey, I'm not going to ask you to relinquish your membership of another party to join our cause, because we're not possessive like that. We just believe the ideas are what matter. And so, yeah, we do encourage people from other parties, if they want to join us. But we also recommend that they probably keep that a little bit quiet, you know, if they don't want to get kicked out of the party that they currently belong to.
But is that you sort of admitting that the Women's Equality Party is a single issue party that you can essentially tack on the side of your other beliefs?
Absolutely not. That is one of the biggest misconceptions about us. We are an every issue party. I mean, there is almost no issue you can think of, whether it's like, you know, transport, whether it's foreign policy, that doesn't have a gender dimension to it, whether it's the environmental crisis, whatever it may be. There's almost Brexit that had a massively gendered, like, angle to it too. And almost anything you can think of will have a gender dimension to it. And so our task is to insist that we stop this ridiculous fallacy of trying to do politics in a gender neutral way, because it's very rare that a decision, whether it's a spending decision or a legislative change, will affect men and women in exactly the same way. And so our task is to make sure those things are properly acknowledged, make sure that policymaking is sensitive to the impacts differently on men and women. And COVID is a really interesting example. You know, initially, it was men who were dying at a greater rate from COVID. That tells you there's a gendered dimension. We care about that. We know now that long COVID is more likely to afflict women. And so your policy response has to, if you're trying to serve your population in a truly responsible and egalitarian way, take those things into account. So our goal is to address the big structural things that prevent men and women from being equal. And we have 7 policy priorities, but we are an every issue party because there's like literally a negligible amount of political considerations, political debates that don't have a gendered angle to them.
Okay. But does that mean then that you actively attract the votes of men and people who identify as male? How successful are you at that, if that's something that you're including?
Not successful enough. Our current membership, you know, we've got across the country roughly, we've had a big membership surge, actually. So these aren't necessarily the latest figures. We're calculating what the latest figures are, but we're around 30 to 35,000 members and supporters all across the country, everywhere. We're a national party, which is really, I think, impressive given that we're so young. But we do not have enough men in the mix. Men are absolutely free, welcome, encouraged to join. I want men fighting alongside us because they will benefit too from these issues. They will benefit too from the women in their lives being happier and more fulfilled. You know, they should join us out of naked self-interest, I would argue. But we currently have roughly about 9% of joiners being male.
That's more than I thought it would be, to be honest.
But it's not enough. It's not enough. I would really like to see more men, support this, work with us, alongside us, because the magic happens when men and women share power. And if we're going to talk about an issue like violence against women and girls, guess what? The only people that can stop male violence against women and girls are men. So we, you know, we need them in the mix. We need them to see this isn't something that's a threat to them. It is something that would actually enhance their lives, enhance their communities, give them opportunities to express the fullness of who they are. I know younger men are much more interested in playing a more hands-on role than my dad, who was sort of 70, did in relation to, for example, childcare and bringing up their families. Our current parental leave system makes it almost impossible, you know, for men and women to truly share that. And one of our key policies is absolutely trying to make that happen. Guess what? Men would benefit massively from that. And part of my job is to try and help them see that. And I would like us to do better and get better at that, 100%.
Why do you think that men, in a massive way, right? Because if you said that only 9% of the people that sign up are men, why do you think that such a big proportion of them are potentially put off?
I mean, I think we live in a world that is dominated by patriarchy, by male supremacy. All of us have been socialized in a way that kind of has been influenced and impacted by that. And so I think for some men, there's a threat factor. There's a belief that actually, if women gain, they stand to lose. And it's, in a way, even good guys perhaps have that fear, you know? And so it takes some time to sort of dismantle that way of thinking. And we're only 6 years old. We haven't even had a chance to like properly make those arguments. And, you know, we're a party that's 6 years old, that has modest resources, competing with a structure that philosophy that pervades everything we do. We're being fed patriarchy and male supremacy from the day we're born, in our media, in the way our society's organized, in what you see when you look at who holds power, who holds influence, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it is a big task to help people shift and change their thinking. And I believe it's possible, but I also know that kind of stuff doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to keep working on it, because it's too important for us to kind of like shy away from this and think, oh, it's a bit too difficult. We'll never kind of win men over, so let's not try. We need them.
You've definitely not got a defeatist. I mean, you're running for mayor of London, so the Women's Equality Party, in many things, not defeatist. Could you talk us through what it is that you would want to do with that role?
Oh, I mean, I don't know if you know, I've worked in City Hall for all three previous mayors of London, Ken Livingstone, Boris Johnson, Sadiq Khan, before I started doing this job full time. So I actually I've worked at City Hall for longer than anybody in the current race who is running for mayor this time around. I know the place inside out. I know the potential the position of the mayoralty has to yield really, really positive, impactful, meaningful change. And, you know, the mayor holds an enormous budget.
How big is it? £18 billion.
I mean, I was born in Malawi. That's my mother's country. The GDP of Malawi is £5 billion. Okay, so just put that in perspective, right? So there is huge potential with that role. We've just come out of a crisis. The crisis has not affected everyone evenly. Let's talk about the economy. Let's talk about job losses, right? City Hall's own figures project that COVID-related job losses, women will account for 60% of those in London, yeah? 60%, which doesn't surprise me, because I know how the fact that women take on more unpaid care work than men do. Women do the majority of the domestic and childcare work, and certainly did during COVID. It's meant a lot more women have had to either quit their jobs, or they've been more likely to be laid off because they're trying to manage all these responsibilities. So it ain't no gender neutral crisis. You can't have a gender neutral response. So one of the things that I would fight hard for is what we're calling a care-led recovery for our city. And that is where we acknowledge that actually investing in childcare as infrastructure in our city would enable huge swathes of women, mothers, I'm talking about specifically here, to re-enter the workforce, which would turbocharge our economy. I mean, let me break this down for you, right? Even before COVID, London had the lowest maternal employment rates in the country, even before, 8% lower than the rest of the country. So that's all this talent, all these brilliant women who, some of them may not want to be in the workforce. That's absolutely fine. But for the ones who do, we're missing out. We're swindling London from the talent and contribution they could make. And if you want to talk about money, they would be paying their taxes. They would be earning money that they would be spending, which would stimulate London's economy, and they would not be claiming benefits, which has a cost associated with it. And City Hall figures, this was pre-COVID, before these heightened job losses, calculated that if you got London's maternal employment, yeah, up to the levels of the best performing regions elsewhere in the country, it would add 21.5 billion pounds a year to London's economy by 2025. Yeah. That is how much untapped potential we're just sitting on because we're taking a gender neutral approach to managing the economy. That is crazy when you're trying to build back, you know, better, but we're saying we should build back equal because that will benefit absolutely everyone. So I am proposing that instead of some of the money that gets raised via business rates in London should be spent on boosting childcare provision for not only people who are in employment, but for those who are seeking work or retraining. And that would bring so many more women back into the workforce, which would be massive for our economy and good for equality. Another area it won't surprise you to know that I'm focusing on is really making ending violence against women and girls a political priority. It is not taken anywhere near seriously enough, and there is no excuse for that. And there is in particular no excuse for it when we know now, because of what was revealed following Sarah Everard's tragic murder, in parallel with that, there was that sort of outpouring and there was data that showed how this problem affects close to 100% of women and girls in our society. And let's say you don't care about the morality of that. Maybe you don't care about equality, or maybe you don't think women, I'm not saying this is what you think, but this is a thought experiment, right? Let's say you're not interested in equality or women's rights. Well, there's a business case too. Domestic abuse alone in this country costs £66 billion a year. The cost of that, dealing with the fallout from women being trapped in domestic abuse type situations. And that's just one that we haven't even touched on sexual violence. We haven't even touched on the other forms of threat and violence that women face. And so, you know, you address those issues. You don't only do the right thing, you do something that supports everybody in our society, because you take away some of the negative cost impacts that are associated with these dreadful, dreadful crimes. And knife crime is the big issue. You know, everyone talks about knife crime as if that's, you know, it is an important issue, but it's not the only thing that is going on for people in our city.
So when you say women's safety as a political priority, tangibly, in terms of policies, what would that look like? So I live in London. How would I feel what you would implement in that area?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, we would reform how the police do their business. We would make sure that they take an approach that actually understands what's going on for women and what they experience, and make women feel, you know, make women have a much more positive experience when they want to report that a crime has happened to them. I've had all sorts of things happen to me in this city that fall under the banner of, you know, harassment and, you know, sexual assault even. And I would never have gone to the police, and I didn't, because I felt there was no point and I wouldn't be treated in a way that would actually help me move on and get justice. So we change the way the police work. We demisogynize policing in London. The solution everyone throws out is more bobbies on the beat. That's going to solve this problem. Right. We know that most crimes of this nature happen within people's homes. sexual violence, domestic abuse is happening almost by definition in your home. So what are more police on the street going to do to help women who are in that situation, in that circumstance? So we'd have an approach that actually is more holistic. I believe that we need to be changing attitudes, changing behaviors, and changing culture. So one thing that you would see tangibly materialize under my mayoralty is the kind of campaigning that you saw in the 70s, when prior to that, you know, drinking and driving was kind of normal. You know, you go to the pub, you have 3 or 4 pints, and then you drive home. Yeah. Well, nobody does that with the same confidence and comfort anymore, because public health campaigning spearheaded by governments was put out there to create this enormous sense of disapproval.
Yeah, that's it. It's actually the peer pressure rather than the safety that sometimes kind of stops people from doing it.
Exactly. You would see relentless campaigning that creates, you know, a culture, a climate in our city where we know that not all men are violent towards women. But what we don't see, in my view, is enough disapproval, you know, in a way from the good guys, which deters the bad guys from their unacceptable behavior. And so there's a few elements to it, as I say, policing. But this isn't just a crime and punishment thing, because if you're focusing on policing, you're just like accepting that it's inevitable and dealing with the symptoms of a problem rather than preventing it from happening in the first place. After Sarah Everard's case, all the politicians in the land almost were talking about, yes, this is very serious. We can't allow this to happen in our society, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Well, guess what? In the mayoral race 2 weeks ago, we had the Ending Violence Against Women and Girls hustings organized by the women's sector. I was the only mayoral candidate to show up. I tell you what, the news cycle moves on. And so too does the interest and focus of those politicians. If that is not an argument for why a party like the Women's Equality Party is needed, I do not know what is. I was so angry and disappointed, and I felt let down, and I felt that London's 4.5 million women and girls were being let down.
But when you talk about how politicians, particularly the ones in the main parties, they just talk about what's big in the press at that time, a lot of it's performative. I think especially women listening to everything you've just said would be very persuaded by that. However, I still feel like it's really hard to dissuade people from voting for particularly the two main parties. Even the Liberal Democrats, which are the third party, they just have a very hard time breaking that two-party stronghold on the system. And a lot of it comes from the fact that voters feel like, what is the point for voting for a party when they're not going to win? That's the feeling. So how are you combating that? How are you persuading people to vote for the Women's Equality Party anyway?
Well, in this election, I mean, which is why it's our top priority at the moment, I think it's very easy to make the case, because you get to cast 3 votes. You get to choose who you want to be the mayor. You know, you get to choose somebody to sort of represent your area. And then you get to choose, and this is your orange ballot paper, which party you want to pledge your support for to send to the London Assembly. So you may, if you're a Tory voter, you know, do what you like on your other ballot papers. Demonstrate your support for the main party that you back, and that's absolutely fine. But on the orange ballot paper, you get to do something that in a way enhances what your normal vote will be. You get to do something that widens the voices that will be round the table helping London become and recover and be the best city it can be. And so in this election, I don't think it's a hard sell at all. In normal first past the post elections, like general elections, it is hard. And so what we do is we're super tactical, and we put in place approaches that allow us to have maximum influence over the other parties. You know, I call it, we'll call out the worst in order to bring out the best. In the last election, general election, we stood 5 survivors of sexual violence or domestic abuse against existing incumbent MPs who had unresolved allegations of those things on their record from the Labour Party, from the Tory Party, across the board. We weren't picking on anybody, because we were trying to highlight how the mainstream parties don't take that issue seriously enough. Women make complaints, but actually the parties close ranks to protect the men, leave the women who've made those complaints out in the cold, have very poor policies and processes for investigating these issues, et cetera, et cetera. And what happens is you have some of these guys swanning around Westminster acting with impunity. The five MPs that we stood against, not a single one of them was returned to Westminster. So we knew we weren't going to win a seat. But what we did was we did a laundry service on Westminster on behalf of everybody in this country. And we sent a message that impunity is not okay.
So you're kind of a party come pressure group.
I think all political parties are pressure groups. And we are operating in a system that's hostile to us because we're small and it's basically a two-party state. And so we have to use really creative guerrilla type tactics to get our influence across. I mean, I'll give you another example. We will often announce our candidates really early, as soon as we can in any area that we're standing. And the impact we've seen that have is it pushes the other parties, because they want to neutralize the effect that we might have on the race. It pushes them to stand women, because just by showing up, people will have conversations in the debates that happen during that election on issues they wouldn't otherwise discuss. The other major parties are more likely to put women because they're a bit scared of losing votes to us. And so guess what? If more women are more likely to end up in Westminster, even if they're not representing our party, we've won. We're disruptors.
Okay, let's talk about you personally for a second now, because you're the first woman of colour, the first person of colour to be a UK National Party leader, and you're the first openly bisexual person to lead a national party. Talk to me about how it feels. Is it a lot of pressure to represent multiple different underrepresented groups? You're only one human.
Yeah. It is. And I started describing it only a few weeks ago, actually. It just sort of came to me in a bit of an epiphany. What I feel a lot of the time is this thing that I now call fear pressure. So it's a bit like peer pressure, but it's different. And a lot of the time, I feel like the stakes are very high, but the margin for error is very small, right? I feel that because there are so few people that kind of like, I don't know, look like me, have my background in the political sphere, if I make a mistake, I feel like that mistake is way more likely to be catastrophic than it would be if I was one of the many, you know, white, upper middle class, Oxbridge educated. There's nothing wrong with those people, but there are too many of them in politics when you contrast that with how many there are in the general population. You know, we're a representative democracy. And so for me, I do feel a lot of the time quite stressed.
Are you scared of cancel culture?
I wasn't really thinking specifically about cancel culture. I was thinking about how partly because we're disruptive. And so there's a lot of people out there that find us to be a bit of a nuisance. You know, we're sort of exposing the shortcomings in what they're doing, individuals and also political parties as entire entities. And so there's a lot of people out there who they would rather we kind of fell out of the picture. And so when you know that there are people in this sort of establishment, the political establishment, that aren't really rooting for you and are waiting for you to make a misstep so they can then be vindicated, you know, in saying, you see, look at those upstarts, they got too big for their boots. Right. Now let's go back to business as usual. But now we've gotten rid of that sort of little annoyance. So I do feel under quite a lot of pressure. I feel that if I do make a mistake, and I am only human and I will make mistakes, I feel that I'm going to pay a heavier price. Who's right. going to stick up for women and girls if we suddenly find ourselves dealing with a scandal or a crisis or something that's blown out of proportion that diverts attention away from the really good work that we're trying to do? Compare how much coverage, say, Nigel Farage got as leader of a small party with how much coverage we get for the work we're doing. Compare how much coverage Lawrence Fox gets.
Although I feel like one of the differences there as well, though, is that is money, surely. I feel like Nigel Farage and UKIP had some money behind them.
I am waiting for some kind of like billionaire philanthropist feminist to leave us a big healthy endowment in her will or something. That's not happened yet. We don't have big backers. I mean, Lawrence Fox's mayoral campaign was funded by a single donation from one, you know, ex-Tory donor, about £500,000. Boom, that's the maximum you're allowed to spend on the mayoral campaign. We've got crowdfunded, we've done like, you know, small little community events. It's a real hustle for us.
Is that where the majority of your money comes from, is donations?
Yeah, grassroots, absolutely.
Okay. If Obama did it.
Yeah, I know. Thanks for reminding me. It is possible, yeah.
You said you used to be a Labour Party member. Do you not sometimes feel a bit frustrated by the smallness of the Women's Equality Party? Do you sometimes feel like, oh, I feel like I could just get more done if I went back to Labour, got myself into a position of power and squeezed in these WEP policies?
No. And the reason for that is I think that because part of our model is to influence those who have more power than we do to call out the worst, but actually bring out the best in them. I'll give you a little example. You know, the Labour Party for the first time, they got a woman in the shadow chancellor role. Fantastic. Annalise Dodds. I was so excited when she did her first big statement in the summer. I watched what she had to say, and she didn't mention the word woman once. She didn't acknowledge in that statement, she didn't acknowledge social care and childcare as big issues that needed to be considered if we're going to have a really effective response to economic response to the crisis. And that I know that she knows about all that stuff and cares about all that stuff, but she's in an institution which is asking her to prioritize other things. And so for me, even if I was like elected as an MP from another party, I don't necessarily have the mandate to pursue issues that would really make a difference in relation to equality. So representation is good, it's really important, but what do those people have a mandate to actually fight for? Mm. And so I just think doing this work in this way allows me to be uncompromising, and that feels really important to me. I think that there's a role for us, and I want to see all the other big parties kind of like up their game. And I think they will. I think they can, and I think they will. And I think we're going to be a kind of key influence over them. And that's the contribution I think is right for me to make and for us to make. Mm-hmm. But yes, there is. I wish the political system made it, and the voting system, the electoral system, made it so that we didn't have to, in a way, be so creative all the time and use resort to guerrilla tactics and sort of fight so hard. I wish there was more of a level playing field. I wish that, so we could have more plurality, I think is the word, yeah, in our politics, rather than this kind of like narrow system where there's two big players and they dominate everything and we're at their mercy.
Yeah. First past the post is just always going to screw over little parties. Although you are also so young, and I foresee resources rolling in.
Thank in you. A bigger way. I like this.
But my question for you is, if/when that does happen and you grow, long term, what are the key goals for the Women's Equality Party? Are we talking like MPs in Parliament? Are we talking Women's Equality Party run councils? What would be the focus if resources started to come in thick and fast?
Right. Fantastic question. There's a few things. After this election is done and dusted, we're all going to like catch our breath and have a little rest. And sure. Then our next big project is something called the WEP Academy. But it is essentially, well, kind of what it says on the tin. It's an academy where we are going to, you know, open our doors to, yes, women as a priority. It doesn't matter. They can be from across the political spectrum. And we want to equip women with the confidence, the literacy, the vocabulary around how politics works, around how economics works, around how the media works, from a gender lens. I want to give women the confidence to find their voice, find their power, and find each other. Some of them will become political candidates. Good for them. But not all of us are going to want to do that. Some of them might want to be organizers, local community organizers who are really pissed off that a nursery in their community is closing down, and they want to challenge that and fight for it and save it in their local area. They're not interested in being politicians, but they want to get things done in their local area. So we want to help people kind of like find the tools and make connections and build up just their knowledge around these issues so that they can then go and use that. We had our very first person elected to a local council nearly 2 years ago now. Her name's Kay Wesley in what we call the Feminist Republic of Congleton up in East Cheshire. She is an amazing, amazing example of what happens when you get one Women's Equality Party rep around the table. Let me just whistle through what she's done. They now have a childcare policy in that council that they didn't have. They now have an equality strategy that she wrote that now influences all the decisions that get made in the council. They've had streets named after women. Congleton is now a white ribbon accredited place. White Ribbon is the movement which is all about men standing up to say violence against women and girls is no good. It is now White Ribbon accredited, all because of her. In her first few weeks, she got all the language changed in the council. So they used to say chairman in every meeting. They now say chair, because you might think that's like a small thing, but actually our attitudes are anchored in language. And she's one woman who got in place, had a serious mission, a serious agenda. The other councillors didn't know what hit them.
Would you accept male candidates?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If they share our values, if men want to help us do the work we're trying to do, of course. I'm not going to accept a male candidate who's a gender pay gap denialist. No, absolutely. And actually, in Scotland, there's a man standing for the party, as it happens, this election.
His name in is Holyrood elections, so for an MSP position. Okay. Yeah. Can I quickly ask, actually, you said you've got WEP candidates running in Holyrood. Does the Women's Equality Party have a stance on Scottish independence?
We don't have an official party line on that, but we have people in our party with different views. I mean, I personally, I've been open-minded about the idea of independence. I get it. I know why. If I was Scottish, and if I had to be subjected to all the things, particularly this Tory government has imposed on me and my country in relation to Brexit, in relation to all sorts of things, I think I'd be quite hungry for the chance to say, you know what, can we just govern ourselves? Thank you very much. So we don't have a hard party line on that. And there are people in our party with differing views, and I'm okay with it.
It's interesting, you talk about how, you know, people would be invited to the WEP Academy from any side of the spectrum. And, you know, for instance, the people running for the candidacies in Scotland have different beliefs. I would imagine that you're at least allowed to say the Women's Equality Party is left wing.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
I think we might be the most left wing.
Right. I wanted to establish that.
Party in UK politics. I mean, when you look at what our manifesto is calling for, it actually is pretty radical, certainly relative to some of our, peers. But what's a really interesting thing, though, that's just like struck me. Since Joe Biden was elected in the USA, I am absolutely intrigued to see how much of his narrative and his rhetoric, not all of it, but there's a part of it which resembles what we're calling for, particularly in relation to social care and childcare. He has literally this week announced, you know, their big federal spending package, and there are hundreds of billions of dollars pledged in that spending package for social care and childcare. And that for me has blown my mind. Like the Americans, even, you know, the Democrats, even the most left-wing Democrats are still, I was in Denmark actually many years ago, and they were telling me like, yeah, if Barack Obama was standing here, he would be like the equivalent of our far right. But it was so interesting for me to see that. And I think that's going to start rubbing off. I think this thing I'm talking about in relation to, I want a version of our equal parenting and caregiving policies adopted by the mainstream parties, is becoming less and less of a pipe dream by the day. Because if the Americans are able to incorporate some of those things, the principles and those concepts, into their COVID recovery thinking, I think that's a real sign of what's to come.
Just lastly, for anyone who is listening, who's a bit undecided about whether they're going to vote at all on the 6th of May, what would you say to them?
I would say you must vote. Please vote. Our democracy is in crisis at the moment. Their public trust in politics and politicians is at rock bottom. And in order to sort of rehabilitate that, we need people to engage. We need people to use their democratic rights. So step first plea is please vote. Second plea, have a look at what our candidate, one woman all by herself, managed to do in Congleton. And let's scale that up across the country. Everyone will benefit if we can make that happen.
Okay. Well, Mandy, thank you so much for talking to me.
No problem.
All right, take care.
See you. Bye.
Bye. Okay, Mandy Reid there, the leader of the Women's Equality Party, and she's also running for Mayor of London. I will put her Twitter and the party's Twitter in the episode description. Thank you so much for listening. I said it at the start, but make sure you get in touch with me at @JuliaBell_X. Let me know what you thought. Has she swayed your thought processes on, you know, how you might vote on the 6th of May? Or is it kind of one of those things where they're nice ideas, but you're not fully sold? Or did you disagree with everything? Let me know. This week, before the 6th of May, I've talked about it a lot, but this is a big week and these final few days mean a lot. So I will be sporting my vote earrings, which I made in collaboration with Designed by Wingers. You can actually see me wearing a pair of them and not much else in the logo of this podcast. So if you'd like to bag yourself a pair of those, the link is in the episode description. And if you put Julia10 at checkout, it gets you 10% off. So it all comes in at under £15. Why not support a female-run business and buy yourself some cute jewellery that sends an important message? Listen, have the best week. And if you have suggestions that you want, you know, for people that you want me to have long-form conversations with in the future, let me know. I'm more than happy to try and set those up. If you like this kind of style of podcast, rather than consistently doing the ones that explain what's happening in the news, I'd be happy to oblige. And that's it. I'll speak to you in the next one. Okay, goodbye.